so much for joining us today. We're here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we are going to have our guest with us today is Tony Martinez. Tony is a food and drug and international trade attorney, and he was directly involved with the passage of the landmark Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act back in 1994, and at that time we had him on many of our radio shows as well to talk about the implications of that. And today we're going to focus a little bit on regulatory affairs as well, but we also are going to talk about Tony's knowledge in terms of his own health and what he has learned. He's also a patient advocate, and he's also involved right now in improving trade relations with Latin America, including Cuba, which is, of course, a very, very On his health, Tony is a type 2 diabetic, and he has successfully put his condition in reverse and remission through the use of a ketogenic diet, a high-fat, low-carbohydrate diet, and has also improved his personal cardiovascular profile. In addition to sharing that, we're going to go into the Kraft diabetes paradigm later on in the show. So thank you so much. Thanks for being with us today, Tony.
Hey, it's great to be with you again. I hope you can hear me. I'm here in the lovely Hudson Valley of New York, and just happy to be back with you on the show.
Yeah, no, you're coming through loud and clear. So
okay,
we
good.
Did have a show, you know, not that long ago, and you shared a lot of information with us, but, you know, we'll revisit some of that as well, and then we'll go into the topic that you wanted to share in terms of not only your own health, but your patient advocacy.
Sure. Happy to do that.
Are you hearing, like, little music in the background? I am. I'm not sure what that's about.
It's because... I'm near a cafe,
music?
But I don't have that one of these outdoor. I'm in the show must go on mode.
Okay.
But I hope you can hear me better now.
I can hear you. And the thing is, we had a little music in the background, so that seems to be a little.
All right. There shouldn't be any more music in the background there.
Nope. It's really, really just you, and that's what we would like to have.
Okay. Sure.
So now let's revisit what's going on now in some of the politics in terms of regulation of dietary supplements. I know that I've been getting emails almost every day of actions that are being taken against manufacturers of dietary supplements, and they seem to be, in terms of the FDA and the FTC, getting ever more aggressive.
Well, it's a double-edged sword. On the one hand, there has to be, you know, compliance with the law and good manufacturing practices and, you know, all the requirements, truthful, non-misleading advertising. And unfortunately, some manufacturers, either for lack of having, of not having proper legal counsel and guidance, get themselves into trouble. By the same token, the aggressive nature is part of the fact that the regulators like to have things in black and white, and unfortunately, when it comes to dietary supplements, not everything is black and white, because we've learned, or we know now, certainly food and components in food have medicinal properties, and we have an infrastructure in our legal regulatory system that basically is guided to analyze things very, you know, very simply, single chemical entities. This is what the drug model that we work off of, where a company is trying to show to the FDA that it's X component that does why action in the body, and that's the basis for getting an approval with these known side effects and so forth. It's really about the about trying to have the drug approval process conform to a whole range of products that really are not a good fit for that kind of model, and then we have that strong regulatory mentality, and they, you know, these regulatory bodies do cross the line or not doing a completely good job in it. They're just, some of them are just too aggressive or not approaching it in an intelligent way.
Right. That's a perfect example, Tony, what I'm talking about. Yes, regulation for safety concerns, I'm all for it. There's a couple of issues, however, with what's going on now is that the regulation is so intense that it's really saying that no new entity, really, unless you have several million dollars as a startup, could even begin to offer, let's say, homemade manufactured herbal salves or tinctures. You just can't do it. That's the problem. And they're going after people. For instance, just last week, the state attorney general in New York, and he's been particularly aggressive, he's demanding that 13 different manufacturers that are selling devil's claw cease and desist. And the reason is that he did only DNA testing, which, by the way, DNA testing is not enough, like you said, because it's such a rich and complex biophysical model in terms of plant chemistry. But what he did is he said that the these particular supplements had a very slightly different species. It's called Harbacophytum zaheri is one of the species name, even though it might say on the label Harbacophytum procumbens. But this is such a minute point. In addition, there is no harm or really difference in the therapeutic modeling between those two. So it seems like such an obscure thing to waste our state money on.
Well, you know, in defense of the, to give, just to keep a balanced perspective, in defense of the Attorney General, trying to do is, Attorney General Schreiderman is just trying to make sure that what the public is buying is actually truly representative of what's being marketed. And, you know, I agree that, you know, it would behoove the Attorney General's office to get people who actually have an understanding of the dietary supplement industry and the chemistry and all of that. You know, there's, you know, wonderful resources, the American Botanical Council, there's a number of other groups, American Herbal Products Association. There are experts. They're very knowledgeable people. And, you know, I think maybe the Attorney General could take a different approach, but let's be clear. It's not like the office is trying to wake up to try to make life miserable for the supplement industry. They're just trying to make sure that consumers are getting what's being represented on labels. And it's not an easy job, as we discover. But, you know, the Attorney General's office, I think, can do better. But let's not, you know, as the saying goes, throw the baby out with the bathwater. It'd be more constructive for government and industry and science to be working together. So that way, you know, ultimately, when you and I go to the store, we want to get, truly representative, high-quality products. We don't want to be buying crap that's out there. And there are some manufacturers who are the fly-by-nights who don't, you know, try to cut corners, and they ruin it for the rest of the other responsible, ethical professionals and manufacturers out there. So it's a balancing act. I think, they could have handled the devil's claw situation differently. I hope they would do that.
Yeah, it just seems like, you know, that is an expenditure of public funds. And I guess since I'm within the botanical supplement viewpoint and supporting its sales, and also understanding that there's such a tiny difference between these species and no difference really in the activity on a medicinal level, and certainly no danger. When we look at these labeling laws, let's say something like trans fats, because people understand that, and of course we're going to be talking about fats and carbohydrates coming up on the show today. If you look at something like fats, there's these loopholes where you can say zero trans fats on the front of a label, and then there's tricks involved with that, because if you turn it around, you're allowed to say zero trans fats if there's less than a very small amount of trans fats in something they call one serving. So in terms of, let's say, crackers, one serving is two crackers, but nobody only eats two of them. So they're really not getting zero trans fats as soon as they eat three of them. So, you know, that seems like tricksterism to me.
Well, that's really a reflection of the rulemaking process that exists, because the average person out there may not even be familiar that when any time the federal government or state government publishes any of these administrative rules, there's always a period for public comments. And oftentimes, the only sector of the public making comments are the industry. And the industry is always looking for a way to lobby and get keep their costs down. They don't think about necessarily the longer term implications. If you know, I ask a, would ask a food manufacturer, if he really understood and appreciated what trans fats does to your customers, why would you be selling it to your customers? Even notwithstanding the fact that because you use trans fat, you may get another month or two of additional extended time of life of the product life, because it'll last longer. But you have to ask yourself, well, what about the damage that you're doing to your customers? Why would you want to make products or that are complicit with basically taking away or harming the health of your customers? So there's a lack of that kind of ethical thinking, I would submit, that that the value judgments that are being made, that's really the challenge. I think it's slammed in the processed food industry space and basic the food industry in general, that you know we're living the consequences of following the low fat cholesterol paradigm for heart disease and obesity, which turns out has only made us fatter, sicker, and dying earlier. So this is what has to change. And consumers are doing it. You know, people who begin to learn and demand, they're forcing these changes. But it's not going to be an overnight process. It's going to take time. Because what I attribute it to is to two things. The costs to make change, this industry is resistant to making these changes because it costs them so much. And second, the fact that we've discovered that we've been wrong about this whole paradigm about fat and cholesterol, in that, Dr. Yudkin, who wrote the book about sugar, and that he had argued that sugar was the culprit behind heart disease and obesity. And he lost that debate to Ansel Keys, who argued that saturated fat and cholesterol was the culprit behind heart disease. And we've learned that that's not that's not the case. So I'll stop for a moment so you can comment again or ask me. But this is what is brewing right now in our environment and in the national and international conversation.
Well, getting back to trans fats for a minute, because now hasn't the FDA ruled that they actually have to be removed from all food? And if that's the case, will the industry simply substitute something else which may prove to be just as toxic so that they can have the benefit of extended shelf life?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And again, it requires real better interaction between the food industry and consumers and the scientists. It's like, again, it's like, why would you put, you know, an ingredient that ultimately harms your end user because you squeeze out, you know, additional extend the shelf life? What is more valuable to you as a company? Having customers for the long term, who are healthy and will be getting your product, or putting out a product that you believe, I think falsely, oh, you know, because I'm going to save money because I don't have to do as many manufacturing runs. Well, again, this is the ethical, you know, dilemma that the corporations face, and this is something that they are, I think, they're reaching a point where they can't ignore it, especially the whole issue with sugar. I believe that at some point within the next 5 years, we're going to dramatically see the decrease of added sugar in food, processed foods products, and in just the general wariness. I mean, the beverage industry is feeling it because people aren't drinking soda as much anymore.
Right, Tony. What about the fact that you're really, I mean, I've been shocked to find out that the movement is really interesting from the consumer level. Apparently the information is getting through, because if we look at a decrease of sales in McDonald's and yet a very strong showing for, let's say, Chipotle, who claims to be GMO-free and they have some organic offerings, I mean, there's really a switch.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other piece to it. It seems it's almost arrogant on the part of the food industry to think, oh, well, people, you know, shouldn't know whether their food is GMO labeled. Excuse me. Everybody has a right to know what's in their food, where their food comes from, and everything about it. And it's their job, if they believe that GMO is safe, is to make the argument not only to the FDA or the regulators, but also to the public. I mean, people, these things are new. They've never been used before. And so people are wary about it. And also, simple, natural, local is more sensible when it comes to food.
That's really true. Let me ask you something else about that, since you brought up now, as you know, in terms of the GMO labeling, it's very confusing. And the side that does not want labeling is really smart, because they have a proposal that already passed the House of Representatives and I believe now is moving forward into the Senate. And the name of that bill is something very sexy, like the Safe and Effective GMO Labeling Act. Yet the people who don't want it to pass because they've read it and know that actually it's going to give GMOs a big pass, they're calling it the Dark Act. But by calling it the Dark Act, I think we've been doing a disservice, because when the legislators actually read the law, it's not going to say the Dark Act. It has that sexy name saying it's a good labeling law. And, of course, they never read that whole package, do they?
No, they don't. But what you're bringing up, that's really an issue about how the things in general, one of the rules in life, you know, perception is, you know, 3/5 of reality. You know,
Tony. 3/5. Only a lawyer would say that.
Well, I mean, it's human nature. We are driven by what we're told, and if something sounds elegant, attractive, I apologize for the siren in the background here. I'm outdoors. you know, that's part of marketing and branding. You have to, you know, our side of the issue has to be equally as clever and equally as creative. And people like to be for things than usually against things. It's human nature. So how you position an issue is very important. That's the other dynamic. So the pro GMO side is pushing their agenda, you know, couched in a positive light. And it's more effective to be positive than to be negative when it comes to pushing an issue forward. You have to figure out what's the best way to do that.
Yes, I agree. So that's why in this particular case, I think, you know,
I work with individuals and companies and even industry in doing this kind of thing, because this is how Congress responds. When we were doing the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, the issue was about access, freedom, information. It wasn't about, oh, well, the FDA is, and even though the FDA at that time was under the leadership of then Commissioner Kessler, was very, very aggressive to the point that they equated some of his tactics to being equivalent to, you know, the Gestapo-type tactics, seizures, guns drawn, now those kinds of things, on food and supplements and practitioners. So one of the reasons why the industry was successful in getting that legislation passed was because it was an act that was presented in a positive, constructive, empowering light for consumers. You know, we have to make the argument that consumers benefit by having the truth, full disclosure being told to them, and their right to make choices to be respected. And not every consumer, you know, you will have a debate about, well, make an informed choice. Well, yes, that's going to take time, but you do that in an honest, transparent way. You can tell people everything that's great about a GMO product and that it's safe enough, and there will people who will absolutely say, I'm still not going to eat it, or I'm not going to buy that product. And the manufacturer has to listen and understand that, because they sometimes fall under the belief that because they've developed this GMO version of a product, that it's the be-all and end-all to that particular type of product. It may be not. But at least be honest, be transparent, be clear with your consumers so that they can make an informed choice. And if you think they're not informed, well, you need to spend time and money educating them. You know, people, for example, the GMO side don't understand why GMO products are manufactured to begin with. And so there needs to be more discussion about that, because you ask yourself, well, why would company X create a product that has all these different things that have been added to it? And then when you hear the argument, I mean, you have to ask yourself, well, does that make sense? Is it only because they're trying to extend their bottom line? Is it merely profit-driven? These are, again, ethical evaluations that consumers have to make.
Well, that's a very good discussion. Well, we're going to go to a little break here, right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Engineer, you can play the natural medicine chess on this first break. And when we come back, we will continue our discussion with Mr. Tony Martinez, who is an attorney and also deeply involved with the supplement industry. And we will be talking about his personal experience with blood sugar balance and successfully controlling type 2 diabetes. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll talk about high blood pressure or hypertension.
Hypertension or high blood pressure is a disease of the Western world and a product of modern civilization. Cultures that continue to adhere to an indigenous lifestyle, which includes low stress levels, a non-refined whole foods diet, as well as vigorous exercise, experience virtually no episodes of essential hypertension. It is very interesting to note that when individuals from these societies emigrate to Western countries and adopt Western habits, they too fall prey to hypertension. Naturopathic treatment of hypertension has not changed essentially in the last century. The mainstay of the treatment still relies on diet, exercise, stress reduction, lifestyle modification, with secondary support from other modalities such as hypotensive phytotherapy or herbal medicine, hydrotherapy, which is the therapeutic use of water, clinical nutrition, as well as homeopathy. We'll focus on phytotherapy in this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest.
Let's talk about Taraxacum officinalis. This is an unpopular nuisance to many homeowners trying to build that perfect lawn. However, this common weed, the dandelion, is a powerful yet safe botanical medicine for the treatment of hypertension. In a Romania study in 1974, the common dandelion was found to be as potent a diuretic as a commonly used drug called Lasix. Dandelion, however, due to its rich levels of potassium, acted against potassium ion depletion, a dangerous condition known as hypokalemia, seen as a side effect of many antihypertensive drugs which promote diuresis. The leaf of the dandelion was a more effective medicine than the root, although the root is utilized by naturopathic physicians and has a powerful liver-specific medicinal quality.
Crataegus oxycantha, also known in the vernacular as hawthorn, is a common tree in the family Rosaceae, or the rose family. Extracts of the plant in the Western literature date back far beyond the Middle Ages. Even the Chinese were privy to its usage, especially as a digestive tonic. The therapeutic principles are found in extracts from the leaves, berry-like fruits, as well as the flowers. In Europe, Crataegus is well respected for its effects at lowering blood pressure, blood lipids, reducing angina attacks, and preventing and perhaps reversing atherosclerotic deposition in arterial walls. This plant has demonstrated a remarkable safety record, but because of its powerful effects, it should not be used with certain cardiac or hypotensive drugs and should be used by a qualified practitioner of alternative medicine.
Other herbs are also helpful for hypertension, such as garlic, olive, and olive oil, and ginkgo biloba.
So if the pressures of life are making your blood boil, don't forget about these herbal medicines the next time you reach into the natural medicine chest.
And welcome once again to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, bringing you this show on Progressive Radio Network. We're always so happy to be on board with Progressive Radio Network. For one thing, you can listen to our show today with Mr. Tony Martinez, and in fact, his last show got literally, I think, over 1,000 downloads, Tony. We have about 130,000 downloads of our shows right here on Progressive Radio Network and climbing daily, so thank you, listeners. You can always find out more by going to our website at naturalnurse.com. And we have a very large schedule of events happening where you can meet with us either online and take a course where you can get CEU credits for many professional careers that you may be involved in, or just learn and get a certificate from the Florida School of Holistic Living or from Natural Alternatives. And we have on-ground classes. We have a Chinatown tour coming up where we will be in Chinatown learning about Chinese medicine. And we do that a couple times a year. The fall date is October 4th this year, 2015. And we have a class where we go out and gather herbs and make them into medicine. Our last one will be on October 11th, and that will be in Westport, Connecticut. So go to naturalnurse.com, look at schedules, and you can see all the classes that we have happening right now. And today we have as our guest Mr. Tony Martinez. And Tony, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you after today's show?
Sure. I have a website, and wow, I didn't realize there was that download, that many people downloaded the show. My website is www.a, like an apple, c like in chocolate, martinez, and then the number 2.com. acmartinez2.com is my website. And if people are interested in following me, there's a contact form. Just send a, fill that out, and I'll put you on a mailing list and keep informed on what I'm doing, what I'm talking about, and what I'm, you know, what's going on with me. And I can also connect you to, if you're dealing with issues like type 2 diabetes or heart disease or whatever, connected with a number of very smart people and groups, that, get together on Facebook and manage and turn around their condition through the use of low-carb, high-fat diet. It's really remarkable what I've been witnessing and hearing on the testimonies and experiences of people. And also, there are some very smart doctors and scientists that also are part of this that have a really interesting interplay and make some incredible contributions. So please contact me, and we'll connect you.
Now, you know, this is such important information because, of course, diabetes, particularly type 2 diabetes, is at an all-time high and growing at an alarming rate, and it's called an epidemic, which to me makes people think that you're walking along and you catch it, which is not the case.
Well, yeah, it's also because the underlying cause of diabetes has been largely ignored, or the condition that precedes the type 2 diabetes condition has been largely placed below as a low priority, and that's insulin resistance. And that is the condition where, despite the fact that your body is putting out insulin to meet the carbohydrate glucose load that you are putting into your body by eating the regular diet, the body's not responding, and the blood sugar levels are not coming down. And over time, there's a great doc, one of the great doctors who is turning this around, treating diabetics effectively. You have the type 1 diabetic, Dr. Richard Bernstein. He's fantastic. But there's a doctor in Canada named Jason Fung, who's a nephrologist, who literally has turned patient type 2 diabetics around through supervised, monitored diet and intermittent fasting. Basically a program of getting type 2 diabetics resensitized, getting their bodies resensitized to insulin, by changing what they eat and when they eat. And that has had the profound positive healing effects. I mean, he's documented. There's a great blog called IntensiveDietaryManagement.com. I highly recommend that to the audience to take a look at. All of his success stories are there. I'm talking about stories of people who have been injecting for many years insulin as a type 2 diabetic, and following, going under Dr. Fung's treatment, putting their condition in reverse and either eliminating medication or dramatically reducing it completely. Now, you would ask, why aren't we paying attention to this? Why is it when somebody...
Now, wait a minute. I'm the one who's going to ask. That's just what I was going to ask. Why is this not part of mainstream intervention?
Well, you have to, there's, I believe, this is my opinion, it's a double-edged sword. On the one hand, you have a lack of knowledge of clinical and metabolic nutrition on the part of the medical community. You know, why aren't medical doctors, medical students being required to take as much clinical, therapeutic, metabolic nutrition as they are being taught pharmacology, number one. And then number two, there's no incentive on the part of the pharmaceutical industry to focus on this. The dark side, there's a saying, is the pharmaceutical industry is interested in having lifelong clients. They don't want to cure. When was the last time that we cured a disease in this country? When was the last time the pharmaceutical industry came up and went to FDA and said, FDA, we have a cure for X disease or Y disease? When? And when you think about it, it's really shocking. We have a Baskin-Robbins, literally, for no pun intended, pharmacy cabinet on how to lower people's blood sugar for type 2 diabetics. But there's nothing to get down to the underlying reasons why their sugars are elevated that high, and they don't even employ as a first line of treatment. Well, you know what? If your blood sugars are so high, stop eating the foods that raise your blood sugar. Stop eating so many carbohydrates and watch what happens.
Definitely not. They just talk about using a sugar-free substitute with toxic sweeteners, muffin.
Yeah, well, but even the muffin is the problem in and of itself because
exactly.
Carbohydrates all become sugar in the body. That's the end product of carbohydrate is glucose. And if you are type 2 diabetic or you are obese, your body can't handle the load that you are putting on it. So it would behoove common sense, logic, and reason. Stop the assault that you're doing. And for some people, it's very difficult. You know, when I tell people that, you know, I don't eat rice anymore or I don't eat bread, they look at me and they go, wow, I couldn't do that. Or I haven't had, you know, a bowl of cereal. I think the last time I ate anything, I had a bowl of coconut flakes. I had these paleo flakes that were terrific, but they were made from coconut, not from corn or oats. And this is the thing to get checked. Grains and sugar raise blood sugar very high, and the body has a hard time with it. And you have a situation where we now have half the people who have type 2 diabetic or predisposed. And this is the crisis that we face.
50%. Yeah. That's outrageous. And I think a lot of that is because, like what you're talking about, the testing itself is not necessarily accurate if they're only testing blood sugar
rather than just looking at the
insulin.
You have to test both. And there's a great doctor by the name of Joseph Kraft. He wrote this book called Diabetes Epidemic in You, and he's been interviewed by a good friend of mine from Ireland, a brilliant biochemical engineer named Ivor Cummins, who has a website which I also recommend to everyone called thefatemperor.com. Ivor is one of the most intelligent people I've ever met, and as an engineer, his thinking and approach is systems, root cause analysis, and solution. He looks at an entire system, identifies what's the problem, and then looks at how do you address the underlying problem to reverse and correct it. We need more engineers in medicine, or more engineering thinking. But getting back to Dr. Kraft, and on the fatemperor.com, you can see the interview with this great man, this Dr. Kraft, where Dr. Kraft actually studied not only the glucose tolerance, but he saw how people, their insulin levels responded. And he discovered that there were four different responses in the subjects that he studied. And only one pattern, which he calls in his book Pattern One, was of a population that had a truly normal blood glucose, blood and insulin response. The other three, he was able to show there were abnormalities because of the amount of insulin that had to be secreted to bring the blood sugar low down to a normal level. And it gets technical, but I recommend this book to everyone. And I would make the argument, now you have actually an intelligent way to start looking at how to prevent and also treat and reverse diabetes. This is the way, you know, it's not enough to get a glucose tolerance test. You need to get that 5-hour glucose tolerance test with an insulin assay. Now, not everybody's going to do that. And not
so
every
let
doctor...
Me ask, let me ask you this. If people ask a physician, perhaps, to go a little more deeply and perhaps do an insulin assay, is that something that's often covered by health insurance?
Yeah, yes, it is covered, but you have to be smart when you engage your doctor because you have to say, look, if I have all these risk factors, I have metabolic syndrome. And the end stage metabolic syndrome is revealed in type 2 diabetes and coronary heart disease. And so this is what you're saying to the doctor, look, I need to know how my body is handling, my insulin response. You know, that's another test, everyone. You should find out what your fasting insulin level. If that number is high, if it's above 5, that's a number that should be a red flag to you. You want to get to keep that fasting insulin level down, especially if you're normal. If you're type 1 diabetic, you don't have, the insulin you have to inject. But for everybody else, there is beta function in the pancreas, beta cell function, and there's insulin. And you need to know what is your body doing on a daily basis in order to keep the blood sugar in control, the homeostasis of glucose in the body. So, yes, you ask your doctor, but you go one step further and say, Doc, I want to know how not only, how I handle a glucose tolerance test, I need to know how much insulin my pancreas is putting out. Why? Well, here's scientific data, or here's Dr. Kraft's book. If I'm not in these ranges, then there's something I need to be doing right now so that my situation does not evolve into full-blown type 2 diabetes or into coronary heart disease. And so, as I said, this biochemical engineer, my friend Ivor Cummins, says, insulin is the bus driver of all of this stuff. Because insulin is a very powerful hormone. Insulin is anabolic, which means it builds, it creates, and it stimulates. And if you have a lot of it running around, and it doesn't have, and it's not being signaled or processed correctly, it's going to begin to wreak havoc in other ways or reveal itself in other ways. And it's a critical. You can't live without it. But at the same time, we really need to spend our time and research on this because the underlying root cause of heart disease and type 2 diabetes is insulin-related, insulin resistance. And I say that with the caveat that I'm not a medical doctor and I'm not a scientist, but I feel fortunate that I have come across some very brilliant people who understand this and are employing this in their clinical practices, and they're talking about it. And there's a wonderful doctor in Colorado.
And you have made the effort in your personal life to create this change, and you have personally seen how much it can do. Now, we are going to take one more break right here, and I do want to tell listeners that you are listening to Mr. Tony Martinez, and we're going to come back with more We're here on Progressive Radio Network, that's PRN.FM, Gary Knowles Network, with you. We love to hear from you. You can get in touch with us, the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, by going to naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And on this break, we'll just listen to some promos, maybe two or three promos, about the many excellent shows that are right here on Progressive Radio Network. We'll be right back with more.
Progressive Radio Network is now on iTunes. Search for us to listen and download past shows or get them updated automatically. Just type Progressive Radio Network in the search bar and download any show free of charge. Progressive Radio Network, information for the independent mind.
Why would anyone ride on top of an elevator, lug around an 11-pound large print dictionary, or compete in a swim race unable to see the course? Well, this is me, and I've got some riveting experiences to share with you. Hey, I'm Mark Farrell. Join me for Insight, a new show coming to PRN.FM. It's about overcoming adversity, and who doesn't experience this in some capacity? I'm no doctor, but I'm an expert in me since I've been dealing with various forms of adverse conditions all my life, like having a rare visual disability that challenges much of what I do. Insight, real-life issues, including mental health, anxiety, depression, suicide, drugs, and alcohol. Celebrity guests will also reveal on Insight how they overcame adversity to make it, as well as your calls on challenges you struggle with. My difference makes me stronger. That's my mantra. Listen and discover how your difference makes you stronger. Insight, Thursdays at 11 a.m. only on PRN.FM.
Have you heard? The Burt Cohen Show brings you the hidden truths behind the stories that affect us all and gives you the information you need to build freedom, community, and a much better world. Hi, this is Burt Cohen. Recent shows include the status of freedom of the press under President Obama. Is it time to make the Federal Reserve a public utility? Is the dream of Israel over? How is the Tea Party like the Confederacy? The true history of the National Rifle Association, and how is 2014 like 1914? The Burt Cohen Show, every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. There's really nothing like it.
It's not liberal, it's not conservative. It's progressive, the truth that empowers. Right here on PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Thank you so much. Welcome once again right back to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z on Progressive Radio Network. We bring you the show every Tuesday, 10 to 11 a.m., but in addition, you can listen anytime online, and that is one of the best things about Progressive Radio Network, because that way you can, you know, say, gee, Mr. Tony Martinez, who is the guest today, he's talking about a lot of issues, and currently we're talking about diabetes and the fact that he was able to basically reverse it by using what's called a ketogenic diet. He's giving you great tips. There's a book called The Diabetes Epidemic by Joseph Kraft, which has a lot of information in it. And, Tony, let's talk about your personal, you know, what has changed in your life since you instituted some of these things. Of course, you have to be willing to make some changes, like not eating sugar or grains.
Right. I want to acknowledge, and because I know people wonder, well, who are the doctors that know about this? And I can give you, in Colorado, there's Dr. Jeffrey Gerber, In North Carolina, there's Dr. Eric Westman, and there's a whole others. Dr. Ann Childers is another terrific doctor. There's a whole cadre of health professionals who are really out there, who will really have a handle on this and are really blazing a new trail here and really are going to transform the healthcare system on this country and around the world. And there was a very important summit of low-carb, the high-fat community under Professor Tim Noakes, N-O-A-K-E-S, another very distinguished scientist who really has a handle on this, and I would recommend that to the audience. Now, just getting back to me, what changes have come to me? Well, I'm back in my suit size from college days, the happily so, when people look at me, like, what are you eating or what are you doing? And, you know, I just am like, I don't, you know, I just avoid, you know, no grains, no pasta, potatoes, or sugar, GPS. It's basically is that. Does it mean that everything's perfect? No, it means I have to keep an eye on all of these things because I'm, you know, I have insulin resistance, and I have to make sure that I'm doing things to keep that in check via exercising, via intermittent fasting. Sometimes I'll eat only once or twice a day, and not out of because I'm starving myself, just I'm not hungry. And keep by and by the
big. A lot of people feel like if you did make this kind of sacrifice and just don't eat wheat, that's a good, very simple place to start. I mean, you've gone beyond that.
Well, it's
that they'll be hungry, and yet you're finding, in fact, you're less hungry because you don't have those sugar cravings all the time.
Right, because I'm a fat burner, because I'm keeping my body metabolically to burn fat, because I just, by deduction, I just say, look, my body doesn't burn carbs correctly well, for whatever reasons are. And so at its most simple, I'm not going to aggravate that process anymore or delude myself to thinking if I take a pill, I can go have a vanilla malt, you know, at Baskin-Robbins or something, you know, or at an ice cream shop. I can't do that. But what do I get to do? Well, you know, I get to eat, you know, a nice juicy steak. Or I was at a Spanish restaurant in Miami, fantastic place, and they had that real fantastic Iberico ham. Had a plate of that with manchego cheese and a glass of wine, and that was fantastic. And so you can get creative on this. You can eat good food. It's the idea is to eat real food, and it's basically some type of meat, seafood, and not overdoing it, because excess protein will be converted to glucose. That, you know, one of the miracles of life and nature is the liver as an organ. When you begin to understand what the liver does, it is, you really marvel at nature. As your liver will take excess protein and convert that into sugar. So, your liver will convert whatever you're putting into it either into glucose or into ketones. And the ketones come from fat. And ketones do not require insulin, whereas glucose does. So if you're obese...
Now, wait, let's just talk about one thing. What about the wine? Wouldn't that tend to convert to sugar also?
I have just, you know, there is demonstrated benefit for the heart and that of some alcohol. It's a very narrow window. It's basically, if it was having one glass of wine, two at max, and not overdoing it. And not overdoing it every day.
Okay, so that would be something you would consider like a little cheat, maybe. But
it's not a cheat. It's just something that you have to find out what your zone is, so to speak, because everybody's different. Once you start healing and recovering, your tolerance for carbs or whatever may improve. In other cases, it may not. And you have to, it's really a journey of discovery. And, that's really how you have to look at this, because your body is unique. It's not exactly the same like somebody else's, and you have to experiment and see how your body responds to, you know, to food and different foods. So I know, like, if I were to eat a piece of toast, my blood sugar is going to go boom. I've tested myself. You know,
okay, so would you still say you're a diabetic then, or have you actually been, you know, cured of that diabetes?
Well, I'm not cured. I have it reversed and managed. I have a normal A1C, I cannot, and I will probably never go back to, you know, ice cream cones and, you know, a big plate of rice and beans, or whatever, you know, the high carb, you know. When I go to the movies, I don't eat popcorn. I eat a bag of nuts. almonds or macadamias, you know, those kinds of, you know, you begin to learn, and that is how you change what what you're eating. And then you also get creative. I mean, the beautiful thing about this is you get to reinvent your kitchen and what you're eating and discover alternatives to things. Like, for example, you like potato chips, but potato chips are not on the menu or on the diet. Hey, Brussels sprouts. I read this fantastic recipe, and you try it where you flake out all the Brussels sprouts, and then you cook them in olive oil with a little salt, and you have this wonderful, healthier, low-carb equivalent.
And they too. It's available in the health food stores too. Like, they have kale chips and things like that.
Yeah,
which gives you
absolutely
that mouth feel of crunching on something.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. And not all non-nutritive sweeteners are bad. I mean, stevia is something that is more commonplace. And of the sugar alcohols, erythritol is the one that really does not raise blood sugar. So that's why you see that in that product Truvia that's out there, that's just a combination of stevia with erythritol. And you have to just get creative when you see something like, I love cannolis, but I can't eat a regular cannoli. I can't eat a cannoli that's made with sugar. So you learn how to make this stuff, and you start changing and exchanging the ingredients. You know, you start, if you're going to bake, you start using nut and seed flours, and you avoid all the grain flours, because the grain flours just have too many carbs. And so this is how you change and you adjust. But the fact that, you know, I'm not, you know, on any heart medication. I take that back. I take an aspirin every day. But I wasn't on the pharmacy that I was given when I was discharged from the hospital after I had my heart attack. And, you know, I was so happy when I left with my cardiologist. You know, her response to me was, well, I only now need to see you once a year. Keep doing what you're doing. Take care of yourself.
Well, it is really inspiring, and we're coming to the end of the hour. I want to say that you also told us about another book. I'm called Serial Killers. That's with a C. C.
It's not a book. It's a DVD. It's a DVD, and it's available on Yekra, YEKRA.com. It's a $5 rental, or you can buy it, I think, for $20. It's fantastic. I would highly recommend it, and you'll also get to hear from some of the leading world authorities on this. Your Professor Tim Noakes from South Africa, who wrote a best-selling book called The Real Meal Revolution, and I'm looking forward to seeing that book being published here in the U.S.
Well,
and
we got to end here because we're out of time and they're going
to
cut us off, but I do want
right,
to tell
well,
everyone
look
that
forward
this
to being back and being back on the show in the future and checking in, and it's really always a pleasure to talk with you, Ellen.
Thank you, Tony.
And I wish my best
you can
to the audience
show
here.
Or tell your friends, because it will be archived on Progressive Radio Network. And until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse at naturalnurse.com and Facebook The Natural Nurse, wishing you the best. Stay healthy.